Welcome in to the Cam and Strick podcast, episode number 27. Andy Strickland, along with, listen, there's only one person in the world who enjoys being quarantined, and that is Cam Jansen, who's loving life in his own little studio, hanging out by himself, doesn't have to shake anybody's hand, doesn't have to say hi to anybody.
I fucking bow to people.
You've never been happier.
I bow to people now, brother. I fucking bow. I'm not shaking your fucking hand. I'm not hugging you. I'm not kissing you on a cheek like the French would do, which I don't mind that. I don't mind that. But now I do. Now I do. Bow to me. Bow to me. That's my greeting I'm having with everybody now. Don't be fucking close talking either.
Hey, can you imagine when we get back to reality? What do they call it? Normalcy?
Yeah.
Okay, we get back to normalcy. What is normalcy going to even look like? Like, what are we going to be doing? Are we going to be walking around with our own little personal hand sanitizers? Like,
fuck yeah.
Spraying each other in the face, basically, like, before you shake hands. Hey, give me your hand.
No.
Give a little hand sanitizer. Go wash
take
your
a shower.
Hands.
Yes.
Take a shower.
Seriously, I don't give a fuck what you do. Just don't touch me. Like, I'm at that point. I'm changing my ways, Andy Strickland. I'm wearing fucking gloves in the summertime when I pump my gas, when I deal with money. Fuck that. I'm wearing gloves. I'm doing a look. And I kind of joking, but I'm kind of not. Like, shit's going to change, man. It is what it is. And we're going to be very cognizant of touching things and being, like, touchy-feely. I don't fucking like touchy-feely people anyway. I don't like close talkers anyway. So this is actually a fucking net positive for me, personally.
You know, I took my kids for a hike yesterday. We had a nice little walk. I mean, it was a beautiful day out here in the Midwest, and my kids were like sitting on like benches and stuff. I'm like, I don't think you should be sitting on that.
Oh God,
there could be germs on there. My kid calls it the big germ. He's like, is the big germ on this? I'm like, yes, it's everywhere.
Yes, it is. It's everywhere. Don't touch anything.
Don't touch anything.
I'm worried about your kids because I'm by you all the fucking time. I know.
What about when you order a pizza? Like, for years, everyone makes their pizza with bare hands and stuff. Is that going to bother you now?
Well, don't they burn it off then? I don't know. Man, just let me eat my goddamn pizza, Andy. Goddamn, dude. Come on. I have fucking groceries dropped off at my house. We've been doing that before the quarantine.
I don't know about that.
You're from, like, look, where you're from, I'm from Eureka, partner, and I'm getting groceries dropped off at my house. Like, I'm a step above you right now.
Over here in the hood.
The ghetto part of... wealthy part of Missouri. The ghetto is part of the wealthiest part of Missouri.
Yeah, and it's still nicer than Eureka.
Your house is worth five times more than mine.
And it's still the hood.
It's still the hood. That's great.
Ken, I've got these neighbors. They're supposed to be self-isolating, and they've got people coming in and out of their house left and
right.
Dude,
they're having a fucking gangbang, dude. So you got, there's like cars lined up all through your front yard. They're banging you. Dude, go look at it. Go peep in there and see what's going on, man. I'd be fucking curious.
Well,
dude.
I can't because you can't get too close. You got to stay within 6 feet.
Dude, they're all banging each other in the living room, and you're right next door, and they have cars out the wazoo. I'd be like, fuck that. I'm banging on their door. Are they good looking at least? How old are they?
You've got like women like walking in and out of the house all hours of the night.
What do they look like?
Not good.
Oh, dude, is he slanging something?
I don't know.
Is he slanging? Oh,
I'm trying to get to the bottom of it.
What drugs do they like?
I don't know.
I guess blow.
My neighborhood is like a bunch of like tear downs, a bunch of newer houses, and there's a handful of houses that have been here for a long, long time. That house I'm talking about apparently is like the original house in the neighborhood. So they hate everybody. Like, they don't care. This is the way they've been doing things for years.
It's like the Ozarks on Netflix, dude, where the old school crew, like, our family fucking man here. Fuck that. He's having a fucking orgy spreading viruses. Go fucking bang down his door, dude.
So in their world, in their opinion, like, we're infringing on their territory because we built these houses and moved in. But dude, it's
dude, you're
control.
In the city basically, and he's bullshitting. He's talking like he's living in the fucking 1800s. Fuck that. That's his neighbors. What's he talking about?
True story. I called Cam the other day. I might need some backup, dude. I'll need you over here.
Look, I got people that owe me a lot of favors out here, motherfucker. Like, I do a lot of favors for people, and I don't ask much back from people. So if you need help with that, like, that's a couple phone calls away, homeboy.
Hey, what are you watching on Netflix now? And before you get into that, I want to talk about the Tiger King real quick, because I know you didn't watch it.
I did watch it.
Tiger King is like
Tiger Queen.
It's like Jerry Springer with animals.
I'm like the one guy that didn't like it, because I look at it like it's fucking too much. This guy's running for president, and then he's Governor, and then he's got all these boyfriends, which is completely fine. I don't give a shit about that. But then the Tigers, he starts losing coin. I don't care what the fuck he does. But once the Tigers are affected by it, once he starts losing money, he's getting pocket sued, the Tigers, like 50 of them in one ring, that kills me. If you're torturing animals, I want to kill you. I hate everybody on that show. I stopped watching it.
Wait, are they being tortured by having somebody in one cage?
Well, they just start losing money. And then they're barely fucking feeding them. There's 50 in one cage. And that's the episode. It wasn't even that deep into it. I'm like, I can't do it. I fucking can't do it. And now that I know that you could buy a tiger for $2,000, Kate and I are going to get one.
They're dragging animal parts, like legs of cows, and just throwing them over the fence.
Oh, fuck, man. But it would be really cool, and I always think if I had a shit ton of fucking money, I probably would have an exotic pet where I would spend, you know, 200 G's a year at least. No, 500 G's, $1 million a year. I'm going to throw a fucking $1 million a year on it. For trainers, food, all that. So it, like, genuinely loves you. Like, just knows you. Just like how my little kitty cat right next to me right now where I'm sitting in my office. If she was the size of a tiger, that's what I would want. Because she just obeys what I... Well, kind of. But that's what I would want. I would spend money and get an exotic pet, for sure.
Hey, is anything bothering you on Twitter? Like, all these athletes that are posting TikTok videos and just starving for attention?
Oh, I know.
Does that bug you?
People with kids, I look at it like, if your kid, like, that's cool for them. Like, if it's cool, like, but some of the TikTok videos with, like, guys singing, like, fucking nerdy, man. Like, I know I'm a nerd too. That's fine. We post shit because we do a fucking podcast. But, like, when guys are singing Backstreet Boys and they're not with a hot chick, if you're a hot chick and you want to do TikTok, fuck, good for you. Good for you. You're hot. That's what you do. But when you're just a dude and you're singing Backstreet Boys, and you're like, look at me, now I'm going to switch camera angles, and now I'm seeing it, now I'm a producer, now, like, fuck you, now you piss me off, because I can't handle anymore, Andy Strickland. Don't do TikTok videos if you're not a hot broad, or with kids and family.
All right, listen, our guest coming up, did he beat you up?
Oh, Darcy Tucker?
Yeah, did he beat you up?
Yeah, I was throwing heat on him. He's a scrappy son of a bitch. He cut me with my own helmet. He got fined for it, too. It's pretty funny. What a good dude. I mean, you could tell he's like a fucking great guy. Talks about having Brian O'Reilly come into his house. I'm like, Jesus, did you have to hide, like, you know, your wife with an 18-year-old Brian? I'm like,
no, he's the nicest guy in the world. I thought he was a psycho. I was a complete psycho. And all of a sudden, he's like the most pure, nice guy off the ice of all time.
I know. Isn't it weird? Like, if you watch me play and then you met me, you'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, now I get how he is, because that's how he is, you know. But for him, complete opposite. And I've played with guys just like that, though, Andy, man. Like, they're just a fucking killer. And all of a sudden, they're like, oh, hi, I'm wholesome.
Hi,
like, oh,
I'm Bob Bassin. I'm, like, the nicest guy you'll ever meet in your life.
There you go. I went to a children's youth, Christian youth group when I was, like, 5 years old at this, like, you know, Chuck E. Cheese. And I'm running around with kids, and Bobby Bassin's, like, rolling through the ball, you know, like, the little slides.
The ball pit.
And I'm like, oh, my God, that's Bob Bassin. And he's just, like, doesn't cuss. Like, he's wholesome and pure.
He's amazing.
Like, God, when I look at guys like Bobby Bassin and Darcy Tucker, I look at myself like, fuck, you're probably going to hell. They are way better people than you. Figure your life out.
He's a great guy. And he became an absolute icon in Toronto. You would probably be an icon too, Cam, if you played in Toronto. They just, like, every NHL market loves the tough guys. And even though he probably wasn't characterized as a tough guy, but he was so scrappy, brought so much energy.
Oh my God,
that
dude. He was a
in a market like Toronto. And I will say this, I mean, Toronto has done this for years. I've always said it, never hesitated to say this, that they overrate players more than anything, any other market in the entire league. If you become popular in Toronto, or you play in Toronto for a long time, you'll be able to sign another contract somewhere. And chances are you'll probably get overpaid just based off of the attention you got from playing in Toronto and the name that you have, even though you probably aren't as good as everyone there builds you up to be. And maybe that was the case for him. Still is the case for a lot of other people.
And, Andy, you're going to make money after hockey in Toronto, too. I mean, Ty Domi, and fuck, 1,000 games. Like, he's my guy now. So, you know, he was as popular as Hall of Famers, okay? Like, Ty Domi is as popular as most Hall of Famers. Really, like, as far as genuine popularity is concerned, because he played there and he did what he did. Mm-hmm. If I played
like Jake Gardner, for example, some of these guys, I mean, like, just, I don't
well,
know.
Well, yeah, I mean, Ty Domi is 10 times more popular than Jake Gardner.
No, and, but he was like, he got a big contract. And,
oh, well, you know, with money. Okay, now you're talking business. Like, you know? Yeah, I see what you're saying with that. Yeah, 100%. I know, but Tuxin, man, he was a warrior. He fucking rocked, guys. My first NHL fight against him was awesome. You know, controversy involved. He was such a nice human being. Like, mm-hmm. I thought he was going to be like, fuck that. I'm like, oh, I thought he was going to kind of be like me a little bit, but he's complete opposite. And it was kind of a warm welcoming, to be honest with you, Andy.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's a good example for you. I was a huge Darcy Tucker fan. I loved the way he played. I loved the energy that he brought and just the intensity and the entertainment value. He talks about this in the conversation. You'll hear this. You don't see too many players that play that way. You know how big of a star you could be if you brought that dynamic to the game every single night? You'd be an absolute rock star.
Oh my God. Hitting guys emotional. I remember we talked about me hitting Cabaret, and he was hurt in that game. Whatever it was in Jersey at the time. Continental Airlines Arena, I should say. And I hit Cabs and I sat on the bench. He comes out of the locker room where both benches are, cuts a right where our bench was, comes on our bench next to our trainers and was challenging me. And I get up, I'm like, go put your fucking gear on. Let's go. And I'm like, God, what am I doing? I go, God, you fucked up, Cam. Like, when that happened, I'm like, oh, Darcy Tucker, that was my first year, and Darcy Tucker's coming on the bench, pointing at me while he's fucking hurt, telling me he's going to kill me. And I'm like, oh, boy.
Oh, my God. This was good, man. He was fun to talk to. Great guy, great human being, and we appreciate him getting some time. Hey, Cam, if you're looking to buy a car, you know what? From Bellman in Troy, you don't have to go to Troy. Because they'll come to you. Or you can just check it out online. They'll do a little virtual sales pitch to you. Not even a pitch. Just let them show you the car, the inside, the outside. Maybe they'll pop the hood for you if you want. Everything you would find out or know or learn about the vehicle if you were there in person, you can still learn from your own living room. It's that easy with Bellman.com.
Andy, they make it easy for you. Look, Schnucks drops off food for us. They come to you. Oh, what? How's the car? I can't come to you because I'm quarantined. Oh, well, I'll show you a video of every in and out of this whole vehicle. They make it easy for you. They've been around the game for a long time, Andy Strickland. They've donated a lot to youth hockey in this town. They're hockey people. They're trustworthy. We love them, and they're good friends of ours, the Bellman team over there. They're doing great work right now.
Yeah, and you can email them. You can text them. www.bellman.com. And again, if you are already a Bellman customer and you need service on your car, check this out. They will bring a freshly clean, sanitized loaner car, drop it off for you, take your car back to Troy, get it all serviced up, and then bring it back to you clean, spick and span, completely smelling nice, fully sanitized, and drop it right back off to you, and then take the loaner car off your hands. So it's that easy. Check out their website, www.bellman.com. Appreciate all the support they continue to show us here on the Cam and Strick podcast. And, of course, our friends, Renee Howitt over there at Cope 24, man. Hey, it's all about parenting. Parenting needs structure. They need to know exactly what they're doing that's right and what they're doing that could be wrong. And no better time to have those experiences and understanding than right now with everything that's going on right now, Ken.
Oh, absolutely. And I tell you what, how essential my parents were, although I tortured them. But they give you the high school's resources on what it's like to be a parent. you know, decisions that you need to make, and the full responsibility of being a parent at a young age. So they give you the, you know, it's a teaching lesson, and they're doing great work in St. Louis. Cope 24, check them out. Great friends of ours again. But we got Darcy Tucker coming up here, Andy Strickland.
He was good, man. This guy is an icon in Toronto, and certainly one of the greatest people that we've had on the podcast. Enjoy this, the one and only Darcy Tucker, coming at you here on the Cam and Strick podcast.
What do the guys call you? What do the guys call you, by the way? What's your nickname? Tux?
Yeah, just Tux. Or Ty likes to call me Pigeon, but I don't know. I don't know how to take that one.
Hey, that's why I call Andy.
Yeah, exactly. From somebody who's been called that a bunch, that's not good. Don't take that.
Yeah.
So what's going on, man? Welcome into the Cam and Strick podcast. This is how we do it. We just roll. We just kind of get going and just have casual conversation. What's going on with you, man?
Not much. I'm in lockdown here in Toronto, like everybody else, I guess. It's kind of been one of those times in our lives where it's probably once in a lifetime sort of thing. So it's been a little bit eerie, a little bit scary for the family. Got a mother-in-law who usually lives with us, but we've sent her to out of town for right now, just to make sure that she stays safe and healthy. So it's just it's an eerie time in everybody's lives, I guess.
Are you keeping busy? I mean, is there some sort of routine you have? Are you able to go outside? Is there parks and still stay away from people?
I'm trying to get my fat arse in shape again. That's what I'm trying to do. I was so out of shape by the time this all rolled around. I coach my one son's hockey team. My work is an ambassador with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and also my duties with Scotiabank, working across Canada, helping them out. So I'm relatively busy throughout the year, but I tell people I have the best job in the world. I get to be myself and have a few beers and tell a few stories, so it's pretty cool.
That's what happens, Cam, when you make a lot of money playing hockey. See,
like, no shit.
They just get to sit back, hang out, do whatever they want, have their own schedule. But Darcy,
kind of like what we do.
Yeah, kind of. But as a coach, when you're coaching your kids, how much did you enjoy the experience? I know it's great to you know, from a bonding standpoint and all of that, and being with your son, but what kind of coach were you? Were you crazy? Were you animated, or were you calm behind the bench?
Yeah, that's the problem with me. It's hard to take the hockey player out of me. I know guys that have made the transition and done a really good job at being able to take that that hockey player part of their mentality away. I just find it very hard. I'm so into the game that it's hard for me to, you know, stay focused on the bench and. As a coach, you got to stay focused. You got to make sure that you get your lines up next and who's going and what's happening and things of that nature. I'm so locked into the game sometimes. I'm more worried about whether a guy hit one of our guys along the boards than I am trying to get the next lineup. So it's hard to do.
What frustrates you the most? Like just coaching youth hockey in the game, how it evolves and changes. As a coach, like what do you look at that pisses you off the most?
Well, the physicality part of the game is almost completely gone. And, you know, you talk to NHL teams and they're all like, where can we find guys that are physical and they play with a little bit of edge? It's just gone for whatever reason. I don't know if it's because all these kids have played spring hockey with each other growing up and they're all buddies and they know each other, so they don't want to do that. I know when there was a lockout, when it was early in my career and we were skating here in Toronto, my brother-in-law and I used to go at it worse than anybody else on the ice. So I don't agree with the, they're just my friend, I can't go out there and hit them. So, I mean, at the end of the day, that's the thing that I miss most about hockey is that physical part. And that, I don't know if it's the word hate. I use it more as along the lines of I'm competitive, you're competitive, and whoever wants the puck the most is going to get it. That's the way it is.
You know, it's interesting though, Darcy, because I mean, listen, you play the physical game. Cam played a physical game. I mean, that's the way you see the game and probably think the game should be played. And then you go watch the Blues from last year in the playoffs. We're here in St. Louis and just how they kind of wore everybody down physically and the mentality they took on from their head coach. Don't you think the game can still be played that way? Maybe if it's kind of, you know, just cemented in their head that, listen, you're still allowed to hit. You're still allowed to finish checks. And if you intimidate the opposition, the way the game is played, it probably gives you a pretty good advantage right now.
You look at St. Louis's defense, they wore people down in the playoffs. They're just, they're not mean, but they're just physical. They're the type of guys that are going to hit you every time you come into the zone. They're going to wear you down low in their zone. And then you know, I think one of the ultimate players in the National Hockey League, not only because he lived with me in Colorado, but just for the simple fact that he just has such a wear you out type of mentality as Ryan O'Reilly. You know, he wears you out just taking faceoffs against you, let alone playing against them all night long. So if you have that sort of mentality from your number one centerman and your defense, you're going to get that throughout your lineup.
Well, we're going to get into Ryan O'Reilly a little bit later on here, but I do want to go back and kind of change direction here. Man, I played the Memorial Cup. We lost with Guelph. I think we partied a little too much. oh, my God, the guys were going out. We had such a blast. But you fucking three in a row, Tyson Nash on that team, 20-hour bus rides in the dub. Talk about your experience over there and being a fucking champion, man. Going on to the next level gives you a lot of confidence.
Yeah, it does. You know what? When you play junior at West, it's just a totally different mindset. You're on the bus with the guys. Our shortest bus ride when I played junior was 6.5 hours to Seattle. So you're driving that far to play one game. You're pretty close with your teammates. And whether it's ribbing on the bus or after the game, you know, you're traveling together after a big win. We were lucky. We came into that team at the time when they were building that championship sort of mentality around there. And we were fortunate enough to win that first one with, you know, Scott Niedermeyer and Daryl Sador were our cornerstones on defense, and Corey Hirsch was our goaltender. So we were lucky to win that first one and be a part of it. We didn't really, you know, play that much as 3 16-year-olds around the team with Tyson Nash and Ryan Huska and myself. But we learned a lot about winning. And when you learn a lot about winning, it just carries through the years after that. And, you know, I'll just tell you a little story about our last year. We'd never lost back-to-back games at home, and the whole time the three of us had been there. And we go into the WHL final that year, and we play Brandon, and we lose both games at home. And we were supposed to have a charter flight to go to Brandon because it was a 22-hour bus ride. And they canceled the charter plane and got us on the bus. And we drove 22 hours straight to Brandon. And Don Hay, I'll never forget it. He said, figure it out back there, boys, or we're never going to win this thing. And we were able to go into Brandon and win three straight and win the championship back at home in game six. Even though we were hosting it, we wanted to win the whole league, and we were lucky enough to do that. But that just goes to show you what the mentality of our group was like. Even when we were down, we were not out.
Yeah, it goes to show you guys had a bunch of absolute studs on your team,
I mean,
just unbelievable. I mean, even in different years, I mean, the guys you played with, Darcy, like, it's just ridiculous. I mean, Darcy, Jerome Aginla, Shane Doan, who apparently, I think you played some minor hockey with, too. You can tell me if I'm wrong about that. But I was talking to Ken Hitchcock this morning. He said, listen, ask him about those guys playing together. But all these names, I mean, did you guys all know that you were going to move on and have great careers in the National Hockey League? Like, did you know these guys were going to be just sick players at the next level?
I knew Jerome and Shane were going to be absolute stars in the NHL from the moment they got to junior. Not only were they good hockey players, they were outstanding people. You know, I'd known Shane since he was, you know, 6 years old, 5 years old. So we played, you know, even though he was younger than me, he was always a big boy and played up and against the older kids. So I had known him for a long time before that. And then we played some minor hockey together in the last couple of years before we left home. We made some teams together. So, yeah, I knew those two were going to be absolute stars. But when you look it up and down that lineup, you know, there was a lot of guys that played NHL hockey. You know, Jason Strudwick, Brad Lukowicz, Nolan Baumgartner, Nat Domichelli. Like, you just look up and down that lineup. There was just guys in there that knew how to play hockey. And for whatever reason, we had such good scouting staff in Kamloops. They found us all and put us all together, and we just meshed really well.
Hey, real quick, Cam, because that guy was talking to Hitch this morning. He said the way that he found, like, somebody sent him a 9-hour video from a tournament that you and Shane Doan were both playing on the same team, and they listed you guys right away. Now, he ended up moving on. And who'd you have? Tom Rennie as your coach before Don Hay? Like, the coaches you had were ridiculous. They went on to have great NHL careers, too.
Yeah, and all different. You know, I remember when they listed us meeting Hitch for the first time. What an outstanding hockey mind! Just a, you know, studier of the game. He loved watching hockey and picking things apart. And then he went to Tom, who was more of like a guy that was a tactician. You know, he's the guy that was the X and O's guy. He wanted everybody in the right spot at the right time, and if you didn't do it right, you weren't going to play. And then Hazer was more of the motivational. Don Hay was more of the motivational sort of coach that motivated guys. And I love playing for Don just for the simple fact that, you know, I could take it. Some guys, you know, as you kind of move through your careers, you run into coaches where if they give you, you know, a motivational speech, some guys don't, you know, back it up or don't go to it. I love that. The more he gave me shit, the better I played. So I didn't mind that at all.
Were you fighting a lot in juniors too? And why do you think you, shit, you had like 140 points and you're a sixth round pick. Were you thinking you were going to go higher than that in the draft?
I was scared of my own shadow in junior.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I ran from everything when I played junior. I was the old 10-minute guy. If you saw my penalty minutes high in junior, it was all because I got 10s from yelling at the referee.
Oh, you and Brian McGrath.
Yeah.
I
was actually scared of my own shadow in junior. When Sheldon Surrey came over the boards, I went to the bench type of guy. So I wasn't tough in any way, shape, or form, but... You know what? I just learned that if I was going to play in the National Hockey League, I had to change my game. I had to become more of a chameleon sort of player. It's a lot better making NHL money than it is making $30,000 Canadian riding around in Fredericton, New Brunswick. So I figured it out very quickly. I better change my game if I wanted to play in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, but Darcy, like, you were an absolute.
That's a light switch, man.
From the outside looking in, it was like, who is this psycho who plays for Toronto who's just like crushing everybody, fighting all the time? And now you're telling me you were afraid of your own shadow. So who instilled that in your game? How did you discover that you had the switch, as Cam called it, you could just flip?
More so just my dad. My dad and I talked hockey a lot when I was younger, especially as I kind of came through junior and into pros. You know, he was a good sounding board for me. You always have kind of stumbling blocks in your career. My first year pro was really hard. I ended up winning rookie of the year. I don't know how I did it in Fredericton. I only had 5 goals at Christmas. And my dad told me, get your arse home. We need to have a chat. So I went home. We talked it out. Had a couple of days at Christmas. I went back and I scored 2 hat tricks in the first 2 games after Christmas. Sometimes you just need somebody to bounce things off, and you're going to go through tough times in your career. That's why I don't understand some of these young kids today. They don't learn to change things and understand that, you know?
Yeah. Talk about that. So you playing the heartbeat of hockey in Toronto. You guys had like the toughest, teams in the league. You had Domi, you had Bielak, you had Corson, yourself, McCabe. What was it like playing in Toronto, man? I mean, goddamn, you guys had some great teams. You had some superstars on that team. You're in the middle of a fucking, you're just in a bubble nonstop. How'd you handle everything?
Did you say McCabe was tough?
No, he's not fucking tough, but he hit guys. No, I'm glad you said that.
I'll tell him to his face. I saw him fight Char. It was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. we were a pretty dynamic group at that time. I say this about the Leafs of today. If you could take some of what the Leafs have right now and put it on the team that we had back then, and take a little bit of what we had back then and put it on the Leafs team now, man, they'd have some dynamic groups of teams here in Toronto. We were just feisty. We were feisty. We were feisty in the dressing room. We were feisty on the ice. We were feisty when we went to dinner with each other. Who lost the credit card game? Guys would get so mad if they lost the credit card game. So you knew you had a competitive group when guys were getting mad for losing the credit card game. So we had a good group of guys and a good feeling in the locker room. And, you know, we backed each other up too. Like if one guy got into a kerfuffle, the next guy was there right behind him, making sure that all was looked after with that guy. So
when did
you know that you were becoming a star? Like when you're in Toronto and still, even to this day, I mean, you're still an icon there, right? Are people just coming up to you left and right? Like, can you go out to dinner and hang out? Do people leave you alone? Or what's it like being a star in that hockey crazed community there?
You're using star very loosely. Listen, at the end of the day, I think that sometimes you hit a market where things are needed and players become bigger than they probably actually are. That was kind of my time here in Toronto. They were looking for something. The team that they had was very, very skilled. I remember they made the trade. It was with Mike Jansen, who's an unbelievable skilled player. And they're playing Philadelphia in the playoffs every year, and they're getting their rear ends handed to them physicality-wise, and they were just looking for something. And I kind of came into that era in time and just added something to the group that, you know, as much as Toronto is a Bay Street sort of city, it's also a blue collar city. We're a lot of construction, a lot of workmanlike sort of people that just love the physical part of hockey. So I kind of added that. And yeah, I think, you know, the one thing I'll say about playing in Toronto, it's the toughest place to play when things aren't going good. But man, when it's going good, it is unbelievable to play hockey here.
Oh yeah, but when it's not, fuck, it's kind of torture. And even if you are good and you're having a great year, fuck, the fans are all over them. The media is all over them. It's crazy, man. It's tough. It really is tough to deal with.
Yeah, that's when you go out and start smashing people, Cam.
Exactly. They can't bitch about that. They can't bitch about that.
That's right.
Yep. Exactly. They
forget about all the other stuff.
Speaking of that, by the way, do you remember, I got to say this. My first NHL fight was against you. I don't know if you remember it or not. But
was that your first NHL fight?
That was my first one, man. I want to thank you. I want to thank you for giving me that. I think I barely touched fucking Sundin. Barely touched him. And you fucking beeline, and I'm like, all right, let's go. And you grab my helmet and beat me with it, cut me open, which I don't get cut open easy. And then you said, oh, fuck, that was awesome. I fucking appreciate that, man.
You know what, Cam? The funny thing is, so I'm not that guy that reads the penalty minutes thing before the game. So I'm like, I don't pay attention. And then the boys are just screaming at me from the bench. Don't do it, man. No, don't do it. And then I got into it. You grabbed me. And I swear to God, both my arms felt like they were in vice grips. I couldn't even move. I was like, oh my God, this guy's really tough and really strong. I bit off more than I could chew here, but I had to fight my way out of it with your helmet.
you get fined for that?
Yeah, I got fine. You know what? The funny thing is Colin Campbell ended up calling me. He's like, you've been such a good boy for the last couple of years here. We're just going to give you a fine instead of suspending you for a game. So they ended up just giving me $1,500. Right.
Oh, you fucking was did. Like,
get it out of your head. Get it out of your head. I'm like, it's the only thing that's making this thing even.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
That's hilarious. You know, you cut him open. I love the antics, by the way, when you were skating back to the penalty box, man, because you let everybody know that you cut him open. Cam says that's the only time he's ever been cut open, by the way.
Well,
congrats on that, Darcy.
Well, no, it's not. But Darcy, you came after me a couple times. I think after the whole Cabaret thing, I don't know why you weren't dressed. I believe you were hurting that game. Like, you were going to come on. Yeah. You were, like, coming on the bench to fight me. I'm like, fuck. Like, they didn't play me another shift in that game, by the way.
Yeah, and then the funny thing about it was I remember the build up to the rematch in Toronto, and you and Beeler ended up going. Was it right away, Cam? I don't remember what if it was right away off the faceoff or if it was kind of into the game or not. Do you remember that part?
Yeah, I was into the game a little bit, a couple shifts in, and Beeler, the big boy, came,
he told me before the game. Like I said, like, listen, I probably should. Like, I was yapping pretty good. I should probably go out there and take my beating. And Bilak goes, nope, I'll go get it. So I was like, okay, sounds good to me. I'll just take this away.
Oh, man.
Hey, Darcy, did the guys, like, did they just hate him? I mean, the Bilak incident, I mean, listen, even on the outside, you know, being here in St. Louis and covering the NHL from St. Louis, it was such a mega story around the league. And everyone knew there was going to be retribution, and it just got crazy. What was the discussion like inside the room after that happened? Did everyone just hate and want to kill Cam or what?
Well, you know, at the time, it was one of those hits that was, I hit like that all the time. It was one banana, two banana, and you keep your head up or you get smoked. And unfortunately, Cabby never got hit because he was always very good and very elusive. But that was one of the times where he admired his pass and, wow, did he get smoked? But I'll tell you this about Thomas Cabaret. He's not only one of the most skilled guys I've ever played with, he's one of the most dynamic guys to never get hit. So Cam hitting him actually was a shock to the whole organization that Cabaret actually got hit and got hurt, because he never really missed games at all. So when we were coming back to Toronto, we're all kind of like in shock that Cabby was going to be out for a while, because he was a huge part of our defense. I think he played 35 minutes a game. And, you know, if he wasn't on the ice, we were in trouble.
Hey, Cam, if I gave you the option to buy a car, you can either go to the dealership or you can buy it from your house, from the crib.
oh my God, Andy Bellman, they make it so easy for you. They'll come to you. Not to mention, they'll have videos of any car that you want. They'll go right through it. They'll show you the ins and outs of everything, make it completely simple for you. And I tell you what, they're great people to work with. They've been in the game a long time, Andy. They're huge hockey fans. They do a lot of charity work in this city, and they make it comfortable for you to go buy a car at Bellman.
Exactly. And we're dealing with a pandemic. Cam didn't know that, but everybody else knows we're dealing with a real pandemic. This is serious stuff. And so that's why they're making an adjustment to make life as easy for you, because people out there still need transportation. People out there were still planning on buying cars. Doesn't mean that you have to put that on hold. The NHL season's on pause, but your car aspirations don't need to be. www.bellman.com. You can email them. You can text them. They've got so many different ways. And again, they will do a virtual meeting with you where they'll walk around cars. They'll show you the exterior. They'll show you the interior. Answer any questions you may have about the engine or the performance. And great lease deals. You can buy a new car, pre-owned deals as well. And again, if you're a current Bellman customer, listen up to this as well, because they will come to you with a nice, clean loaner car, all sanitized. You don't have to worry about the big germs, because they took care of it. They cleaned it all up for you. They'll leave you with the loaner car, take your car back to the shop, service it up for you, and then deliver it back to you. That's what I call service, Cam Jansen.
They make it too easy, Andy. Everybody's going to start doing this kind of stuff now. They're innovative. They're great people. Check them out. Bellman, Bellman.com.
If you can't get there, they'll come to you. Again, Bellman, Buick, Cadillac, GMC. Right across the street, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Bellman Automotive Group, proud sponsor and big-time supporter of what we're doing here on the Cam and Strick podcast. www.bellman.com.
Who'd you room with throughout your career and with the lease and camp and all that?
Great. Yeah, I room with Brian McCabe my whole time basically here in Toronto.
Oh, God.
The funny thing about it is Caber and I roomed together, and then when the collective bargaining came through and they said you could have your own room, McCabe lobbied that he still wanted me as his roommate, because I'd pay for all the ice cream at night when we got back from cheap bastard.
He is cheap, eh?
That's hilarious. Yep. Hey, yeah.
What about your hit on Michael Pekka? Like, you're looking back on it. Obviously he suffered a real injury. Then he ends up in Toronto. What was that exchange like when you guys first became teammates? You guys get along right off the bat, or you didn't talk to each other for a while?
Yeah, so to preference back, it's in game one, he elbowed me in game one, and I lost a little bit of, I got the Scooby-Doo leg, so it was marked down in the chalkbook at that time. At some point in that series, there was, we were up 5-1, and at that time, there was no illegal hit for going down and using your like hip that way, so it ended up happening, and Mike got hurt. Now, did I feel bad for it afterwards? Absolutely. You feel bad when somebody gets hurt and misses games like that. That's part of what, makes us human too. Like, we're human. We want to win, and there's things that happen in the game that you don't like, but you know what? I felt bad. So we had a mutual friend actually that put us together when Mike signed here, and we went and played golf together. And then our kids ended up going to school together, and we became pretty good friends. So at the end of the day, hockey's hockey, and things happen on the ice, and you never want to see somebody get hurt. Of course, I'm a big believer in that. Like but there's some things in the game you just can't control. And that's emotion, and you can't control it sometimes.
Yeah, but like, is that uncomfortable though? Like when he's first come in there, it's human nature. So for guys who didn't play, like, I understand, hey, injury is a part of the game. You're going to be, become teammates. I've seen it, guys who have come here who didn't like each other beforehand and became great friends. I mean, Steve Ott and Alexander Steen, like, best of friends. They hated each other before, Otter came here to St. Louis. But when he first gets there and you first hear the news, it's got to be going through your mind like, oh, this is going to be a little awkward, right? Or no?
Not really, actually. I'm kind of different that way. Maybe I'm built a little different. Like, Steve Thomas and I fought each other like tooth and nail. We give it to each other. And then the first guy to shake my hand when I came to Toronto was Steve Thomas. We sat together on the bus every road trip when we got off the plane. We sat on the plane together. Listen, sometimes you may have a little bit of animosity. Even, Alfredson broke my shoulder in 2002 in the playoffs. If he became a teammate, I'm sure I would have loved him and hung out with him. That's hockey, man. More than any other sport, that's hockey.
Did anybody scare you, Chuck? Did anybody scare you? Like, let me give you an example. Let me set this up. Like when you fucking crushed, was that Sammy Kapanen for the Flyers when you caught him?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, right against the glass. And he just, it was just one of those perfect timing hit where you had momentum and he slid around. Oh my God. Like, did you have to deal with Donna Brashear or anybody like that? Did anybody scare you after you did something like that?
I was never scared. I was always leery of guys. And I think sometimes it wasn't the bigger boys that scared me or made me leery. It was the, you know, Rob DeMaios, the Steve Thomases, the guys that, you know, they catch you with one and put you in an absolute bad position. And those are the guys that made me a little bit leery. The big boys, like, man, they come after you and then, you know, you kind of, you know, suck them in sometimes and they get a penalty and then that was the end of it. They probably didn't play the rest of the game. Yeah, no, I'd suck them in for an instigator. I'd probably dive like I usually did back then and suck them in for a penalty. Then I tell them, you know, you're not going to play the rest of the game. So it's like whatever you did just didn't matter anyways. But I mean,
I heard that from you. I heard that from you. I think a couple times.
Exactly. And then, so for me, it was more the guys kind of in my weight category that, you know, especially the left-handed guys that could throw bomb lefts. Those are the guys that scared me because you had to go with them. There was no choice, man. If you didn't go with them, you look like an idiot. So
did you like being considered a pest? And do you think that's a lost art in today's game? Like, we just don't have enough of that.
They don't have enough of it. I agree. Now, there's a way of being a pest. And I use this analogy when I go and talk to people and we're at banquets and things. There was some method to my madness. I wasn't just out there being crazy all the time. So if we were down 2 goals, I was going after Chara. Because if I went after Chara and smacked him and knocked him on his ass or did something crazy to him, our whole bench is going, look at the little idiot. If he's out there chasing around the biggest guy on the ice, we better wake up and get into the game. Now, if we were up 2 goals, who do you think I'm going after? The only way they're getting back in the game is if, you know, Bergeron or Mark Savard score goals and can get back in the game. So I was pestering them and making them think that they couldn't have a good night. So you have to have some methods to your madness. Now, some guys just are completely out there and say things that are just completely whacked, which is part of their stick too. But I was more of the guy that was going after guys because I had a little bit of understanding of what I needed to do to help us win the hockey game.
Did you hate anybody? Anyone guy piss you off? No, like hate. Like let me say.
Besides Cam. Besides Cam.
No. Well, maybe. But what I'm saying is, like, there's a guy that maybe you just didn't read. You know, talk like if you're sitting on a face-off, sometimes you get a whack from a guy like, "Hey, man, what's up, buddy?" You want to? But you can get a feel for a guy. Anybody that you just couldn't fucking, you didn't understand him, and you just didn't understand what he was trying to do to you.
Not really. Like I don't know. Like you run across guys in certain eras of your career. You know, when I first started, there were some guys out there like you. Everybody's like, stay away from Proby, but you know, he didn't really bother with me. Like he kind of look at me sideways and I'd go to the bench and that would be the end of it. you know what I mean?
And then
there's other guys that kind of come in and you're going, oh man, this guy's going to drive me crazy all night. Stu Grimson used to scream at me from the bench the whole game. I'm going to make you pay. I'm going to make you pay. I'm like, Stu, like seriously, like what do you, I haven't done anything tonight. Why are you up at me for?
Okay. Oh, I love it.
Go chase him around. But no, for the most part, no.
What about Pat Quinn? How good of a coach was he? What did he mean to you?
Yeah, so, and this is another, like, when I go do the speaking engagements, I talk about Pat Quinn a lot. So I wouldn't be the same person I am today. Pat Quinn was the best mentor, manager of people, guider of humans. He just had this way about him that made you feel bigger than you were. He let his star players play a star game. He let his agitators play their game without repercussions. He let his tough guys be tough guys without repercussions. It's hard to find a coach that lets all the dynamics of each team filter out without making them feel like they're not part of the group. You know what I mean? It's a very unique skill to have, and Pat was amazing at it, and probably the best coach I ever had from that standpoint, best human that ever coached me for sure. Just got a lot of time for his family, God rest his soul. He was so old school. I remember back in the days when he'd get off the plane and he'd be shoveling his window in his car with a big stogie and his fedora on. You just think and look at him like, wow, what a great human being. You know what I mean?
Mm. Any bad coaches?
Oh yeah. And funny thing is, like, you, every coach is a bad coach that doesn't play you, right, Cam?
All of them for me.
That's just the way it is, right? So, I had.
No, but you know what I mean, though? Like, anything weird, you bring it down, you know, that kind of shit. You don't have to call them out, but you know how it goes.
Yeah, you know what? Like, bad coaches, I don't really think I had a bad coach. I had coaches that maybe didn't understand and get the group that he was coaching, so to speak, as opposed to bad coaches. You know, like, it's a difficult thing, you know, for certain coaches. They think that they're still players, which I talked about earlier. Sometimes they still think they're playing the goddamn game. Yeah. And that's my biggest fault as a coach, is that they still think they're players. You're not a player anymore. You're a coach. So now you got to figure out how to manage different personalities and different people to all make them think that they're part of the team, even though that maybe they're not playing as much as the other guy. You know what I mean? So, those are the coaches that I didn't like, and I have a hard time doing it myself. So maybe there's young kids going, God, I wish he coached better, because, you know, I just sometimes I still think I'm a player. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah, Andy has that same problem.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I've never really heard a player explain it that way. I think that's an unreal way to explain it, because the ego of a lot of these coaches that you see nowadays, especially the younger ones that are coming in.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's a part of it. Maybe they can't separate themselves from being players, even the ones that really never had a career in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, and I do believe that. Like, I think if you look back and you sit back and look at it from afar, and you see how they coach, and you see the dynamic of how the players interact with their coach, I find that the coaches that are able to suck themselves away from being the hockey player, the guy that was, you know, that sort of mentality where he was the cock of the walk and he was the number one guy, and now you're the coach. So you got to manage 23 personalities or what have you, backup goaltenders, how you're going to play them, issues within the team that happen beyond hockey. You got to be able to separate yourself. And sometimes these guys just can't do it. The best coaches can.
Why did Toronto buy you out? Like, were you expecting that? Like, at that stage, I mean, I know the game was kind of transitioning and whatever, but were you caught off guard by that?
Caught off guard a little bit. You know, I was coming off an 18 goal season. You know, it wasn't like I didn't do anything. you know, it was hard because I think they wanted to change the dynamic of the dressing room, and we had some pretty strong personalities at that time, between myself, Matts, Brian McCabe and Thomas Caverley. We were pretty strong personalities in the locker room and did play a pretty big role in how, you know, we conducted ourselves as a group. So, yeah, I guess I didn't expect it, but I did expect it. I expected something because obviously I had the no movement clause. So they couldn't trade me. They couldn't do anything with me beyond buying me out. So, and I invoked that. That was my right to do, and I invoked it, and they used their right to use the buyout clause.
You hang out with any celebrities, man? I mean, you're in the mecca of hockey. You're in a big city. I know you grew up with, did you go to school with Chad Kroger from Nickelback? Yeah. Any other celebrities you party with? Any other rock stars?
No, I'm not the big, like, honest to God, I'm one of those guys. There was more fierce things going on the ice with me than off the ice. I'm more of like a stay home, watch movies, hang out with the kids type of guy. You know, it's just not in my personality to really be like, maybe when I was single, I would have been that type of guy. But now that I'm married and got kids, I'm more of that stay at home kind of guy and watch movies and hang out with them and coach the kids and have a few pints at the rink as opposed to going out downtown to a concert or something like that.
Oh, yeah. You're in dad mode right now, dude. No doubt. But when you were young, though, did you like, you meet a bunch of people, fuck, you're playing and, you know, you're in the spotlight, shit. Like, I don't know when you get married at a young age, but damn, I must have been tough to not be a part of the outside scene, you know?
Yeah, like, I think we, you know, one of the biggest celebrities that I was able to meet and hang out with a little bit was Mike Myers. Like, he was a huge Leafs fan.
Oh, yeah.
He won my jerseys to the game. Yeah, jerseys to the game in the playoffs when we were rolling there in the playoffs. So, got to meet him a couple times, and that was fun. But no, I honest to God, like, I'm, I, My time spent mostly with my family traveling in the summer now. We've gone to Europe the last three summers, which has been an amazing experience for a kid from the farm to be able to go see that part of the world. Oh, yeah. I'd never seen it before. So to be able to do that with my family and watch their enjoyment going through that has been a lot of fun. This year doesn't look like the European trip's going to happen. So we're going to lock ourselves down here in Toronto and find ways to entertain ourselves that way.
Yeah, you're probably better off for it. What about your relationship with Shane Corson? Like, how good of buddies were you guys before you got married? Because now you're married to his sister, right? So how'd that come about? He introduced the two of you?
Yeah, you know what? It's kind of funny. So Shane and I, when Shane first came back to Montreal, getting traded from St. Louis back to Montreal, I just made the team. So he got traded there, I think, in October. And we were playing in Toronto on a Saturday night, and so we flew in on a Thursday, and then I ended up meeting his sister at the Royal York here in Toronto, which now is our home, obviously, but it's a pretty special memory for us to have, and went out for dinner with them and kind of chased her around for half a year, and she didn't like the cocky Darcy, so I had to become the farmer Darcy again, and things all ended up working out.
Good old farm boy. Hey, no wonder you're a movie night kind of guy. Fucking Corson's looking down your shoulder like, oh boy, you're not going out.
Exactly.
Tonight. Are you kidding?
Well, you asked me who scares me.
There you go. Hey, what was it like? So of course Andy and I was especially really know Ryan O'Reilly. I mean, he's a fucking just a stud, nicest guy. Yep. You know, just a real dude. Gets it. You know, unbelievable on the ice, first guy on the ice. You go, you know, Andy's at the rink every goddamn day, and he watches this kid and what he does. But you had him, he was an 18-year-old kid, right? Like, he was one of the youngest Avalanche ever, and you invite him into your household. Were you like, Jesus Christ, this kid's gonna wheel girls back to my fucking house in the basement? I'm gonna have to lock the doors. I'm not leaving my wife. Like, how did that all go down, and how was that experience with him?
Yeah, he is just an amazing kid. You don't find many young 18-year-olds that can come into the league and do what he did. Just an amazing personality. And I got to find out very quickly what it was like to have an 18-year-old boy. I've got a 19-year-old boy living at home now, playing junior hockey, and his room's like a bomb went off. So I found out very quickly, because Ryan's room was the exact goddamn same way, that a bomb went off there. My wife's like, you got to go in and clean it up. I'm like, Ryan, clean up your goddamn room, or I'm gonna get you. So but no, he's just got this infectious personality that he can hang out with anybody on the team and make them feel good about themselves, and he can make you just play to a different level than what you're capable of playing just by being around him. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying, but I mean, there's only a certain amount of guys that I've ever played with over the course of my career that could elevate everybody around them. And he's just got that personality. Yep. He can elevate everybody around him. And I was so excited when he sent me a message to go to his Stanley Cup party this summer and to see the Stanley Cup with my boys. They look up to him so much. They were both young, like at the time of their lives, to be inspired by somebody, and Ryan kind of gave him that inspiration. So, and he played a lot of video games with him, which I give him shit for now, because my kid is still playing goddamn video games every day. So, but that was Ryan back then. He was very focused on hockey and such a good young man.
So I'm going to follow that up though. So have you always kept in touch with him, like throughout his career, and when he won the cup, like watching him play and winning the Conn Smythe and all the postseason awards, man, that had to be unbelievable for you, considering you saw him when he was wet behind the ears, Darcy, when he came into the league.
Yeah, it was a pretty surreal experience for us to watch him play and to see his family in the stands and his mom and dad to get that opportunity to spend that time with him and on top of it, win the Conn Smythe, just an amazing experience for all of them as a family, I believe. And you know, Coach Bry is quite an interesting character in his own right, Ryan's dad. So I got more stories about Ryan's dad than I do actually about Ryan, to tell you the truth.
No, he's awesome.
He trains. He's
like
trainer,
my favorite. Yeah, he is. He's like a life coach, but he's like my favorite guest to have on. He's an unbelievable interview and great to have conversation with.
He is absolutely an interesting fellow to have conversation with. I took him to the rink a few times when he was down visiting us. We made sure that Brian had a room in the house that he could stay over when he came down. So we've had some interesting conversations over the course of time as well. And I love his feedback on anything hockey and anything life related for sure.
Hey, you know how Ryan does that stick handling stuff before games? You know how he does
that? Yes, I do that.
Yeah. Well, he got that from me, just so you guys know. So put that down. Now, anyway, he's a sweetheart.
If he turned the stick upside down, that would be the case.
Yeah, I was waiting for that to come. I was waiting for that.
Was he doing that as a rookie, though? Because, like, Kevin Shattenkirk tells me stories, like, when he first came in the league, like, he was doing a lot of that work before and after practice.
Yeah, Ryan's got quirky things that he does to not only motivate himself, but also to work on his hand-eye coordination, his puck skills. You know, he does all this plank work in the summer and things of that nature, balance-wise and mental training, and that's all part of it. I think, you know, sometimes guys come in the league and they're more focused on, you know, that nature. I think Ryan's more worried about, you know, the mental part of the game than he is as much as he is the physical part of the game.
Well, hell yeah, Darcy, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Hey, I got to ask you one question, though, because listen, Ken, before we wrap up. Because, you know, we this is a tell-all podcast, Darcy. We don't leave any secrets here. So, you know, I've heard you tell the story how you, you know, Andrew Raycroft, you know, he gave away your leather coat to a homeless guy or whatever.
What a joke.
And then
that's a gutless fucking move right there.
But then you got him back. On this podcast, you got to tell us how you got him back. Come on now.
I don't know how I got him back.
I heard another interview. You said, "Hey, I can't tell the story how we got him back. I can't tell it on this podcast."
Yeah, I can't. That's why I said that. I don't know how
he doesn't have one. Oh my god, that's hilarious.
I will give you this one though. TJ Gagliardi. I don't know if you remember him. He played in San Jose. He played with us in Colorado. This guy loves fashion more than any human being I know. So he bought these blue suede shoes and brought them to practice just before a road trip. So some of us older guys had maintenance day, as we called it, in Colorado. So he left his blue suede shoes underneath his stall, and I put a 9 with a line underneath them in felt marker for him to have on his shoes for bowling shoes, and he had to wear them around for the whole trip.
And they get paid. Those are probably like $1,000 too.
Yeah. $600 a shoe. You get nines in the back of them.
Hey, is your kid a player or what? I know you have two of them. Are they players or what?
And one's playing junior, hoping to go to college, and the other one's still playing minor hockey. So they're both in the system and both kind of going through it here, and we'll kind of see how it plays out. I'm not sure. I say it all the time. I'm like, at that age, I didn't know which end was up. I knew I could do some things on the ice, but I was pretty small and tried to figure it out. So you just never know, right? Just play. I tell them all the time, just play as long as you can. They'll tell you when to stop.
What's it like being in the midst of it though, there in Toronto, like right in the middle of the cesspool? I mean, it's just so crazy. I mean, it's like, how different is it there, these kids growing up playing minor hockey now versus what it was like for you back in the day in Alberta? I mean, it's gotta be night and day.
Yeah. Cam said, I get to spend the bonding time. The reason I'm on the bench is that I want to bond with the parents in the stands.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I like being over with the kids much better than I like to listen to some of the buffoonery that goes on in the stands.
Oh, they're annoying, aren't they, Darcy? Like, it's they're just nice. How do you fucking deal with that, though? And we're going to let you go here soon, but how do you deal with that, though? Especially you. I do ignore my dad. My dad used to hide to watch me, hide and watch me through the glass so he didn't have to deal with anybody.
Yeah, I go to the furthest part of the rink when I watch my older boy play junior. I just can't listen to it. If I'm in the crowd and I hear all the craziness, it doesn't fit with me. So I go to the farthest part of the rink with my Tim Hortons, and me and my wife and my other guy watch the games. So
I got one more for you. And you're right, man. I coach youth hockey with our AAA Blues organization. I don't know if you've ever crossed paths with our program here, but it is nutty. But Carlos Sosa, he was your agent for a long time. And last time I talked to you, Darcy, you were in the agency business. Are you still doing any of that, or did you get away from the representation business?
No, I got out of it. I was spending more time with everybody else's kids than I was with my own, crying out loud. The agent business is kind of crazy now. You're chasing around 13 and 14-year-old kids, as opposed to when I went through it. Carlos and I got together, I guess would have been my draft year for the NHL. So I just was spending more time with 13 and 14 year old young guys trying to recruit them as I was spending with my own family. So it just become mm-hmm. something that wasn't interesting to me anymore at all.
I don't blame you, man. I don't blame you at all. That's got to be crazy. I mean, there's a story today about a 14-year-old kid. He's getting exceptional status in WHL, and I'm sure he's amazing. But again, you read that he's 14, and everyone's drooling all over the kid already, and he's only 14. So sometimes we've got to slow down a little bit.
Crazy.
Yeah,
it's absolutely crazy. And I did say this when I was doing it, that there should be a mandate that you shouldn't be able to approach a family or a kid before he's 16 years old. Like, it's just... to me, it's mind-boggling, to tell you the truth, the 14, 13, and 14-year-old boys.
Yeah, they grow up quick these days, man. They're starting to work.
Do they ever? There,
so they just they get good at a younger age. It is what it is. But it's fun to watch, man.
Do they
it
ever?
Is. Yep. And you got to stay away from those fucking parents, though, Darcy. Don't lose your mind.
I'm doing my best, buddy.
I hear you, man. Hey, appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you giving me my first NHL fight. Fucking love watching you play. Big fan of you, dude. And thanks for coming on the podcast. Brother. Appreciate it, man. All right.
Thanks, Darcy.
I really
appreciate
it, man. Guys. I'm always paying attention to what you guys are talking about. It's awesome. Great to hear. And Cam, I know you come on here in Toronto quite often with my friend Carlo. So I love to listen to you guys.
Appreciate it, man. Love
it,
dude.
I called Carlo last night. Like, give me some stories. He's like telling me everything I don't already know. He's like, oh, he played in Toronto. He played in Tampa. I'm like, yeah, no shit. Like, give me some like real good stories, you know?
Carl's the worst at that.
Carl is the worst. He's the biggest nerd ever. Two beers and he's done.
Oh, I'm sure. I know.
I love it.
That's hilarious.
See you, buddy. Go do your thing, man. Awesome, be safe.
Later, buddy. Take care.
Right on.
Bye-bye. See ya.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that one. That was Darcy Tucker here on the Cam and Strick podcast, episode number 27. What do you think there, Cam?
What a great guy. I mean, the guy was a fucking absolute warrior. You know, just this 10-year with that organization. And he was kind of the glue to that organization. They had one of the toughest teams in 02 when they had Domi and Bielak. Just cool stories, man. And just to be in the mix, with that organization and be a heart of that organization for that long. Pretty cool stuff by Darcy Tucker there.
You know, people forget how tough some of those Toronto teams were back in the day.
Fuck. Oh, my God, dude. Domi, Bielak, himself, Gary Roberts. Was it Gary? Yeah, Gary Roberts. And then I said
Shane
McCabe.
Corson.
Shane Corson. And then I said McCabe. And he goes, ah, he wasn't fucking tough. He was my roommate. I'm like, I believe he didn't cuss, though. But he said he wasn't very tough. But it was pretty funny. He was joking about it. But yeah, man, my first NHL fight against that dude. And, it was a good one. So I always have a – he always has a place in my heart, Andy. Always a place in my heart.
Oh, that's so nice of you to say. Was he a guy that when you prepare to play Toronto, I mean, you're worrying about the Sundins of the world. And obviously the guys that put the puck in the
I was worried about Bielak, to be honest with you.
But,
I mean, come on.
Was Darcy Tucker, was that a name that came up? Because he could get under your skin and force, you know, draw you into some stuff that you don't need to be a part of if you want to have success and win?
Yeah, it'll take stupid penalties. You know, like guys did war. They'd always so happens, Andy. Most coaches would have like some sort of little outline of details from all the lines and have the lineup just posted on the bulletin and it has a little description of each guy. You know, and it was always don't let him suck you in. He'll hit you. Works hard. Penalty kill. Blah 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 blah. So he had a nice long lineup. There's something to think about because you always go out there and just kind of read what everybody has to say, but he had a long one for sure.
All right, Kasparaitis, he's a brand name. And Darcy Tucker, man, this guy had a brand to his game as well. And it's kind of a lost art. He mentions that, and I wish we saw more of it. I want more pest in the game, Cam. We need more pests.
I know, man. I know. What do we do? Write an email out? Fuck.
You know what happens? Homeboy. All the scouts nowadays and the teams that, you know, people that pick and put together these teams, they're not identifying those guys, you know? Like, I mean, they just want guys who can skate fast, who have elite-level skill, and that's how you make it to the National Hockey League.
I think you're wrong on that, to be honest with you. I think that you think all those old-school scouts that we see aren't looking at these games and saying, oh, I wish I had a fucking killer out there that could play the game? No, they're looking for it. They're just not around because you're just not taught to be that way anymore.
Okay, that's a better way of what I'm saying. You know, but the reality is, you're just not seeing too many players
then there you go.
At a young age who are encouraged to play that way. And yeah, dude, you're like, hey, listen, if you finish every check and you play physical and you play in your face and you get under the skin of the opposition and you draw penalties, you're going to play at the next level.
Dude, your stock rises, Andy. If you're a good player and all of a sudden you add all those elements to your game, now you're fucking up. Instead of being a fourth rounder, you're a goddamn first rounder. Like, that's how big you jump. If you have that fuck you attitude, I'm doing anything, warrior mentality, loud, emotional, like, just all those assets will take your status to another level.
Yeah, that's why I love a guy like Matthew Tkachuk in his game, because he got the entire package.
I know.
Who else do you really even put in that category nowadays? There aren't
Not many, but there's going to be a couple that are going to cruise around. There's going to be a kid that his mom and dad were tougher than shit, and whether you knew how to fight growing up because it was out of the game or not, that you still can get away with. You can get whatever you get away with is still a lot. And there's going to be these killers that come up here that can play the game. They're fast or strong, but they have that. I'm not taking shit from anybody. My daddy, my mommy, my grandpa, they're all the same way. I'm the same way. And they're still going to be few and far between, but you'll have another Darcy Tucker coming into the NHL.
I talked to more scouts who say they always put at the first line of their reports that there wasn't virtually almost no hitting in the entire game. No checks that were finished, no aggressiveness, no melees after the whistle. That's what the people want, man. And that's why the Blues, they had success in the postseason last year because they played that style, and teams, they're not prepared for it. They don't know how to handle it.
No, they don't. No.
And you can't manufacture it. You better have the right guys who are willing to play
well, that. And you got to have the right coach to be able to implement that into your game without being loosey-goosey or wild and running out of position and taking too many fucking penalties. Like, you got to be the guys that you think that are undisciplined on the ice are probably the most disciplined. Like, do you get what I'm saying with that? Yeah. Like, guys that have that, I want to kill guys every shift and don't do it, and they still get away with different things here and there. Those are the most disciplined guys. All the other guys that don't do crazy shit is because they don't have that in their blood. The crazy guys that don't do it and just they're able to build a rock guy's Tom Wilson, you think he's out of control? No, he's not. He's the most disciplined player on that fucking team.
Right.
Because he has to tone it down that much more because he's a killer.
Yeah. Well, you don't see. I mean, I don't think people like Ryan Reeves, Tom Wilson. I don't think these guys take a lot of bad penalties. You know, where you can't trust them on the ice. They get involved in stuff, but when they're going to the box, they're normally taking somebody else off the ice with them.
Well, I'm not even going to put those two in the same category because Tom Wilson's the first line dude, I don't want to chirp Reeves, but Reeves like has the easiest job in the world right now. Like, I don't give a shit. I love the cop. He's been in my house. I don't give a shit. He's got the easiest fucking job in the world. He's not playing first line minutes and getting paid a ton of money where he needs to put the puck in that. He just has to go out there and do his thing, and no one looks at him. He hasn't eaten a punch in 4 fucking years.
Neither has Milan Lucic.
Lucic, same shit. They're just cruising around and trying to be unnoticed.
Collecting six sheets.
10, 15 years ago, they had to be in the mix because it's like, fuck, somebody, you're going to have to fight. Like, you're going to... I don't know. It's just they got a good gig going. Not saying that they're still doing what they need to do now. Milan Lucic is way overpaid, but Reaver goes out there and hits guys and he scores goals. Like he scores some goals. He's a good player. But fuck almighty, he's got it easy. He's got it fucking easy. But good for him though.
I'm with you.
I know. All right. Sorry, I went on a rant there. But.
All right, that was cool, man. We got some good stuff coming up too. Some good guests we've had on. And we'll be dropping those very, very soon here on the Cam and Strick podcast. And anybody out there who wants to be a part of our team, again, man, you can always hit us up on Twitter at Cam and Strick Pod. You can always look at CamJansen25 at Andy Strickland. Just hit us up. Advertising opportunities are available right now. I know it's tough times, but we can certainly help you and, get through what we're all going through here with, the events that are taking place in our world, man. It's a different time, but we're here for you. And anybody wants to join our team, you are more than welcome. We'd love to talk to you. So hit us up. Just like our friends with the Bellman team did, man. One of the best decisions we ever made here on the Cam and Strick podcast was partnering up with Dan Bellman and Bellman Automotive in Troy, Cam Jansen.
They're the real deal. They make it easy for you. Times are tough. Times are tough, Andy. Times are tough. They come to you. You want to check out the car? Well, they'll have a video for you. They're nice people. They're classy people. they're Blues hockey, St. Louis Blues hockey people, youth hockey people. It's just an easy environment to walk into, a comfortable environment to walk into, and they're innovative on what they're doing right now in these weird times. So they have a lot of things available. Get a hold of them at Bellman.com.
Yeah, you want to see people who get in your face on the ice, not off the ice. Mm-hmm. And they don't get in your face, man. Bellman.com. Check them out. Look for the phone number there. You can always email them. You can text them, and they'll set you up with whatever you need. Also, our friends over at Cope 24, www.cope24.com. Even in these tough times right now, they're doing a lot of things that are helping people. And listen, when you're home with your kids 24/7 and you've got to homeschool them and they don't go to school, you have no space, you don't get that separation time that maybe you need. You know, parents probably need to learn patience and maybe some of the training methods that you get from Coke 24. They probably need that more than that now than ever can.
I know.
Think about everything Coke does, you know?
What a great sponsor to have throughout these times, man, to get that word out. And, you know, they teach a lot of people, teach young girls and boys on parenting and, you know, maybe they need to be more careful at a young age. Just a million different things, but they're doing great work. Coke 24. Especially nowadays, Andy Strickland. So we did some good stuff, man. We got some good sponsors. We're getting some good guests. We're doing our thing on the Cam and Strick podcast, bro.
All right, great job, Cam. Hope everybody out there is healthy and safe. And again, at the very least, if we can give you some entertainment and get your mind off of the big C word, then I think we can all agree that it's worthwhile just giving ourselves a little bit of time to check in. And tune in here on the Cam and Strick podcast. Until next time, this was episode number 27. Hope you enjoyed Darcy Tucker on the Cam and Strick podcast.